It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 226. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I preview BYU's NIT matchup with UAB, and we talk about just how far we think the Cougars could go in that tournament. We move on to spring football next and talk Ty Detmer, Taysom Hill, and the re-emergence of the tight end at BYU. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and listen to us yap right now.
Let's pull up UAB.
I started the recording, but you were talking. Is that embarrassing?
University of Alabama?
CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast. You keep talking. I'm trying to do the intro. It's very important. It's very key to ground the listeners.
Sorry, I was just warming up.
Ground
surfing
the listeners.
The internet out loud. I will stop now. Go ahead. Give it a go.
Do your kids ever do the narrating what they're doing?
Yes.
Okay. I just didn't know if it was my kids where I'm like, stop. I see what you're doing. You don't need to tell me you're opening the refrigerator and taking milk out. I can see that. Your kids do that too, huh?
The Tuskegee Airmen are on the march. Listen, you don't have to narrate everything. Just live in the moment.
Yeah, live in
the moment. The Tuskegee Airmen are living in the moment.
What is that from?
I believe it's from one of the Night at the Museum movies.
Oh.
I could be mistaken.
I've only seen one of those.
Oh, they are a staple in our house.
Oh, well, you know. In our house, it's My Little Ponies, so.
Yep.
Not quite the same. Not quite the same. Let's see here, Matt. We've got a lot to talk about, so we probably should just skip doing some, like, crazy opening like we've just done and just get right to it.
I'll be honest. Until right now, I wasn't really sure if we had started or not, so here we go.
We've started. That's all in. All your stuff about UAB. All that stuff. That's in, man. I'm keeping it in.
Let's do it.
I want them to, pull the curtain back. Show them how we make the magic. How the sausage is made. Is that what they say?
That's probably a more accurate description of what we're doing.
Yes. I think calling it magic was probably an overstatement. So, Matt, let's
sausage.
Oh, I do like sausage. What is your favorite kind of sausage? Kielbasa?
I'm going to go with hot sausage.
Hot sausage? I like Polish. Polish sausage.
Yeah.
You know what? At Fenway, do you remember that? Getting those growing up?
Yep.
Putting the peppers and stuff on.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. We did get a lot of feedback, Matt, on Facebook and Twitter about Torchy's. You Texans, and I do call you a Texan. Sorry. You Texans seem to love your Torchy's.
That's because it's delicious.
Well, I mean, that was universal among our listeners that had experience there. And I think you Torchy's owes you something. Because you've basically got a bunch of our listeners next time they're in Houston. They will be trying out Torchy's.
Well, you know what? They need to Google that because Torchy's is also available in Austin. That's kind of where it started. And I'm sure they've expanded some other Texas cities. So if you come to Texas anywhere, you just Google that before you get there.
Google you won't be sorry. The Torchy's.
You won't be sorry.
I'm sure you won't. We went to a Mexican place here locally. Terrible. Terrible. Mexican is either good or really, really bad.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of like medium ground.
No. There's not a lot. It was pretty terrible. But it did have a lot of old furniture from rundown furniture from old Mexican restaurants. So that was something.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. So, Matt, let's hop into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Does your voice ever hurt when you do that?
You know, it doesn't. I kind of warm it up a little bit, which is what I was trying to do when you started recording.
I told you I was going to start recording. That's your fault.
But we do that. I do that to you. How many times have I done that to you when you try to start recording and I will start saying ridiculous things? I do that all the time. You've never put it on the show before.
That's not true. I have put it on the show before once, and this will be second time. And the other thing, it really just determined on how fast I am with the record button.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so Matt, it doesn't hurt my voice.
Okay. Baseball continues to roll. We are recording on Monday night. Tuesday night, they have a game against Utah, and then I have Pacifica here in the notes. Pacific is up with a three-game series later this week. Matt, they look like a legitimate contender. I'm not saying to win the College World Series, but to make it to the College World Series.
Oh, I think they're definitely a contender to make it into the College World Series.
If they make it to the, you know, that last few rounds there, that's in Omaha, that's in driving distance. I have always wanted to go to the College World Series. That would be a reason to make this year the year.
Do you know who loves the College World Series?
All college baseball fans?
Peyton Manning.
Does he
Omaha!
Really?
Omaha!
Oh, gosh. Wah, wah, wah. Well, while we're on that, Peyton Manning, top five all-time NFL quarterback, true or false?
Top five?
Top five.
Yeah, let's do it.
Name the quarterbacks you believe are better than Peyton Manning.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, homer.
No, come on.
It's also true.
That's not a home. That is not a homer pick.
He's a cheater.
That's just true.
He cheats at stuff.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, Peyton might have taken HGH, but Tom might have possibly been involved with slight deflation of footballs.
Okay.
Dumb. But go ahead. So Peyton Manning is behind Tom Brady. What about Montana?
I think Montana's on the list.
Marino?
Peyton. Marino's up there. John Elway's up there. Brett Favre.
Oh, I put Manning above Marino and Favre.
Yeah, maybe. But we're just trying to guess who's up in that group, right? Yeah.
He's up in that group. What about...
I don't know if Marino makes it into the top five.
Oh, man, he was good, and he rarely had good offensive players around him. Good offensive line, but skill positions. I mean, his guys were kind of made by him. He was pretty good. I mean, you have to remember, Manning has been blessed by some terrible defenses, so maybe cursed by that. This year, he, of course, got the benefit of being behind the league's best, or on the other side, I should say, of the league's best. But, man, some of those Indy defenses were terrible.
Yeah.
But he was also throwing a Marvin Harrison. You know, he had some good running backs early in his Indy days. So, I mean, he had some good skill position players. What about Steve Young?
Steve Young's in the conversation.
But his career was a little too short, right? His playing time.
I think that's really what gets him there. Yeah. And then if you go, what's hard for me is you get back further and you get into like the Johnny Unitas, Bart Starr guys. It's just hard to make that comparison.
Well, I mean, you and I didn't watch them play. And the game was substantially different than it is today. I would say I think he's top five, six or seven. I mean, it's right up there. I mean, even as someone that rooted against him pretty much his entire college and pro career, he's an amazing quarterback. So that's our break in CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news. Getting back to it, Matt, men's volleyball is also on a – incredible role. We didn't talk about this last week, but after their wins in Hawaii, they have won 12 straight matches, having dropped only one set.
That's crazy. That's insane.
They are now ranked number one in the nation, and I would say they are the team to beat in men's college volleyball at this moment. Both you and I said at the beginning of the year we thought they would be a contender, but Matt, isn't this above what we expected?
No, we were pretty bullish on this team early.
Yes,
if you remember,
that's
right?
True. We were
after they swapped with Stanford, you know, when the middle of January, whenever that was.
Oh, I
think
we were
pretty high, and then the Long Beach State loss. I think we started to get a little bit shaky there. Yeah. But since then, I mean, they've just crushed it.
Did you just call us fair weather fans?
No, I think we were being. I think we started. I think we adjusted our expectations.
Yeah. Okay. All
we had very high homerish expectations early.
Yes, we did.
We tempered those a little bit after the Long Beach State series. But I think since then, I mean, obviously, I mean they're just rolling over people.
It's the dominance that is shocking. I mean, the winning 12 straight is against a lot of that good competition. Maybe not against the best, but against some very good competition, some of it on the road. That's one thing. To drop one set? Whew, that's pretty amazing, Matt. So I think it's time. Do you have your tasty beverage there?
I do, actually. I've already finished it.
There we go. All right. Well, I just got
a cup of ice now.
Mm. Ah, a little Dr. Pepper from your new home state. Matt, it's the NIT for men's basketball, which we knew already. We just don't know when and where they will get a home game against the aforementioned University of Alabama, Birmingham. Woo!
The Blazers.
NIT, yay! I have attended a NIT game in Provo, and it's fun, right? So for people that are there, it'll be fun. As you and I talked about last time, though, even though they made it to the Final Four in 2013, I could not remember any of the details.
Nope.
Their Sweet 16 run with Jemmer, I can tell you pretty much every game in that run, including the Mountain West Conference tournament.
I remember where I was watching some of those games.
Yes.
I mean, it's – yeah.
So anyway, but they are in the NIT, and let's – before we get to this, Louisiana State, Matt, and all everything freshman Ben Simmons, they opted not to participate in any postseason play. Matt, would you be okay with that if you were an LSU fan?
No, I mean that I wouldn't be okay with that if I were an LSU fan. I think you want to see your team play. You want to see your team compete. You know, even if it's not if this whole, you know, what else do you have to do? What are you trying to prove?
It's about
not,
the students.
It's
we don't want to put the pressure on the students.
That makes any sense.
I mean, I put this on Twitter, Matt. Wouldn't you be way more disappointed in as an LSU fan than a BYU fan? I mean, they had the guy that was supposed to be the best freshman in America, and he still might arguably be one of the top two or three best players, and they couldn't even make the tournament.
Yeah, that's a sign, right? I mean, there's something wrong.
Well, they just didn't have enough. I watched them play a few times. I mean, they just weren't a very good team beyond him. I mean, they just weren't good enough.
I mean, the question is, do you really have a good idea of how good he really is?
Do we really know?
I think it'd be really easy to get overrated in that situation.
I will say this. Having watched him play, I've probably watched four or five. I've watched a lot of college basketball this year, more than I have the last few years. I will say this. I think he is good. He may end up being the first pick in the draft. He is not a franchise player in the NBA.
No, I saw one game. I will admit, I'm judging this on a single game.
That's okay. We judge things all the time on this podcast with very little observation. So.
And I agree with your assessment. He's not going to be a franchise player.
No, I think there are other players playing right now who will have a bigger impact, and some of them will be drafted later. I actually think Sabonis is a bigger NBA prospect than Simmons, which I think some people are going to mock me. But I'll tell you this. A lot of people were on Collinsworth's case when Sabonis guarded him in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he should be blown by that guy. I thought it was the other way around. I thought, wow, NBA scouts are going to say, I get it. KC's not the quickest guy. He guarded a nearly all-American point guard, and he's a center. A back-to-your-basket center. I thought that was impressive, and he gave – Collinsworth did not know what to do with it. So anyway, we won't have to deal with Sabonis, Matt, because we're playing University of Alabama, Birmingham. So let's get to know the Blazers a little bit, Matt, shall we?
Yeah.
They were 26-6, including 16-2 in Conference USA during the regular season. Looks like, if you think about it, if I just told you those facts, you would assume they made the tournament, right?
It sounds to me like a tournament team.
26 wins, 16 in conference, all that stuff. They were the 40th best offense, 112th best defense. This is according to sportsreference.com.
Ooh, wait a minute. What defense was that?
112th.
Ah. Ah, yes, yes. Now it's starting to come together.
Now their defense is great. Massey ratings only had them as the 97th best team, which does not sound like that's the cumulative ratings of a bunch of different ones. And sportsreference.com had them as the 115th best team. So now it's not looking quite as rosy, is it? Their best wins, Matt, this is was their problem. Their resume was not great.
No, Old it Dominion, is not.
And they beat Middle Tennessee twice. Both of those were not great teams either, and they were conference teams. Because Conference USA is big, you don't pay everybody twice necessarily, but they beat Old Dominion the first time. But then their losses, Matt, they had several ugly losses. The worst two were both, I think, to Western Kentucky, who they lost to twice, including getting bounced in their first game of the Conference USA tournament. And that's what did them in and kept them out.
That'll always hurt you.
If they had won a couple of games, they might have, in their tournament, they might have slipped in. So we'll get to some snubs here in a minute, but I don't think they were snubbed. Disappointed, yes, but I don't think you can say they were snubbed, right?
No, I don't think so. They didn't get it done.
No, and they didn't even get a home game in the NIT. So Matt, to get to know their players a little better, their three best players, based on statistics, all sophomores. 6'8 forward Chris Cockley, he averaged 13.6 boards and an assist per game. 5'10 guard Nick Norton, very quick guy, 9 points, 2.7 rebounds, almost 8 assists a game and 2.5 steals a game. So I think he's actually on the perimeter, a guy that's going to give us a little bit of trouble. And then they have another big forward, 6'9 William Lee, almost 11 points, 6 boards, 1.5 assists, and almost 3 blocks a game. Matt, which of those three players do you think is the one that gives BYU the most trouble?
You know, the taller guys don't seem real big. I think it's going to be this kid out on the perimeter. Is going to be the one that gives him the most trouble. I'm not as worried about him inside.
Yeah, I am. I'm mixed. The problem for us becomes if we get in foul trouble in the middle, because you've got two capable scorers, these two, both forwards, Coakley and Lee. I agree with you. If people aren't in foul trouble, I think Kafusi, Austin, and Davis will be fine. I do worry about if we get in foul trouble, then all of a sudden these guys may be scoring a lot of buckets. But I'm with you. Norton on the outside, we have struggled stopping fast penetrating guards and giving up some open looks when those guys get past the first line of defense. Matt, it is prediction time. All the lines and everybody's got BYU as a favorite. I think the Las Vegas line I saw had BYU by 5. What do you got BYU by? Because I assume you're thinking they're going to win.
Yeah, I've got BYU. I'm going to take BYU by 7 here. Okay. I do think they get. I think they get some good contribution. You know, this. I think Robert Brown will score some points, but at the end of the day, I just don't think they've got all around what they need to eliminate the Cougars from the tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're a particularly good team. I think people are going to look at that 26-6 record and think, wow. I mean, why are they rated lower? Seated lower than BYU, but it's all about the resume, Matt.
And the fact that they couldn't get by Western Kentucky
twice.
I mean, this is Western Kentucky. That's an 18-16 team.
Well, they beat them though once out of 3 times.
Yeah.
It wasn't
buying it.
They've got problems. I think one prediction I'll make is I think Davis not playing against NBA bigs will have a much better game than he did against Gonzaga the last couple times we played them. So we might see Kyle Davis emerge a little bit more, even though they have decent frontline play there. I think they win by 10. I think it's one of those games that kind of stays close, but in the end, BYU wins without too much stress. That'll take us to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
So Brian Taylor, that's at Boozer Taylor on Twitter, asks, so if Rose and BYU lose at home to UAB in the first round of the NIT, should Rose deserve any criticism for underachieving with this team? Matt?
No.
I don't think this changes it for me, but I think he deserves some criticism for this year.
Yeah, I don't think he deserves, like, let's be fair, right? The question is, does he deserve some criticism for underachieving with this team?
Yes.
So not that this season is some type of moratorium on Dave Rose's tenure.
No, I don't think that's what Brian is saying.
That's not really what he's saying. Maybe, but I think there's two pieces to this, and we talked a little bit about this last week. It took a long time for Dave Rose to figure out what the right configuration was with this squad. And, you know, you can pin some of that, I think, on Dave Rose. It took him some time to figure that out. But on the flip side of that, the players, especially you look at the players that we've been relying on late in the season, those guys weren't ready early. And they weren't ready together early. So I think some of that weight has got to rest on the players themselves for, you know, I don't know if you want to call it taking a little bit of extra time to gel, maybe not being ready to play together. I think it's a combination of things that led to the situation. So some criticism for underachieving with this team, maybe. But I think the fact that he took them from where they were earlier in the season to where they are now, and you look at kind of the developmental arc of this team, I think he's done a pretty good job with the hand that he was dealt. Granted, he did deal it himself, right? But you know, he recruits the players, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I think you and I and many other fans, not just us, and I'm not putting words in Brian's mouth, but I think a lot of us bought into some of the early season hype of this team could be better than last year. And I think, you know, the computers maybe saw that a little bit as well. It wasn't just, you know, partisan fans. Some of the, you know, early season ratings saw us that way. The problem was, Matt, they weren't. They just aren't. You know, I think we you and I have talked about this a bunch on the podcast. We underestimated Tyler Haws' impact on the court.
Mm-hmm.
We just did. We thought, you know, well, he's a scorer and Emery can kind of replace some of that. But you take Holford and, you know, Holford wasn't a great defender on the perimeter, but he was a max effort guy, and we could put him on a guy and frustrate a quick guy. You know, Holford might have been a little bigger and, you know, rangy, and obviously Haws just put it in the bucket. I think we thought, well, these new guys will just replace them. And we were just wrong. They were not as good. I would say, though, Matt, I think this team is better than that 2013 team that went to the NIT finals. And I think a good run in the NIT will change people's memory of this team. I think people remember that 2013 team as being better than they were because they went to the Final Four of the NIT. All that really means to me is they went on a run right at the end, right? As opposed to that they're any better than, say, this team. In the end, both of those teams did not make the NCAA tournament.
But if you look at what this team has done this year, going on a run here at the end in the NIT would kind of be characteristic
of
their season.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just kind of a micro, you know, I don't know.
I think they will, actually. Andre Hutchins would like to weigh in on this, Matt. He 100%, he says on Twitter, agrees with us about BYU fans calling for Rose to be fired. We mentioned that last week after the loss to Gonzaga. He calls it insane and what a joke. I actually agree with both of those, and we kind of said that last year. He says BYU's biggest struggle, and I'd love your reaction to this, Matt. He says, as with football, is depth. It's always been depth. KC, Haws, Jemmer, they can only carry a team alone so far. Matt, is Andre right? Is that the biggest problem for BYU? Let's just focus on basketball for a minute. Was that the problem this year, depth?
I don't know if I'd characterize it as depth as much as I would say depth at a certain position. And this is a problem we've had consistently for several years, is depth with big men.
Yes. Since Mika left on his mission, we've struggled to get really high production out of the post.
And so is that a general depth issue? I don't know. I think that, you know, you don't need five players who can come off the bench and change the game. Yes. You really need that sixth man, that seventh man. That's really what you need. But you've got to have somebody who can produce at the post. And right now we've struggled to find that.
Yeah. And Davis was that early in the season, but when he hits some better, when he gets against some of the better big men, he really struggles to get his shot off. And that was a problem for us against teams like St. Mary's and Gonzaga. We were way too, perimeter dependent. Brian Taylor mentions in a subsequent tweet to his question, we live and die by the three, no post-present, poor defense. I wouldn't say poor defense. Actually, I think they were a much better defensive team this year than last, and the numbers back me up. Very inconsistent. That I would totally agree with. Mm-hmm. They were all over the place. And flawed, he calls it a very flawed team. I don't know if I'd put the very out front there, but maybe they didn't make the tournament. I mean, they're flawed.
They've got some, clearly some weak spots.
Big holes. Big holes. Mm-hmm. So, Matt, this leads to our next point. Brian keeps, he tweeted a bunch at us. I think these are five tweets, but we love it, Brian. Keep it coming. What are your predictions as to the best possible scenario as to BYU's ceiling in the NIT? I predict they lose the first game. You and I have already predicted they will win. The potential next opponents in this second round are either Virginia Tech and Princeton. I'm not overly impressed with either of those teams, Matt. I say, I mean, you start at 32, you go 16. I think they make the eight at least. I think they win two games minimum.
You know, I think if you look at where they ended up, like the bracket they ended up in, it's a pretty good situation. I like the Princeton-Virginia Tech option. I think you end up facing Princeton out of there. And I like our chances against Princeton. And then you look at, after that, you look at the four teams that could end up in the game there. I mean, I think we're competitive with a, you know, with any of those guys. So I think that gets you 2-3 wins in, before you see a team that I think we might really struggle with. You know, I don't know, like St. Mary's.
St. Bonaventure, I think they were seeded number one for a reason. I think they're your biggest threat. I'm not overly worried about Creighton, Alabama, Virginia Tech, or Princeton. I'm with you. I think, could we lose to any of those teams? Absolutely, we could. But I think we would be favored, and we were seeded correctly against those teams. Like you said, we don't have to face St. Mary's in our region, who I would not want to face. I want no piece of South Carolina in the first couple of rounds. Though sometimes those teams out of the big conferences that feel like they got dissed. And I also don't want any piece of Monmouth, who I also think should have been – I think – St. Mary's and Monmouth should be in the tournament, and they're instead in. But we don't have to face any of those till the end. So,
yeah, if you look at those, some of those other regions, much tougher roads.
I totally agree. I don't, you know, and they don't. The NIT does not. This is done a lot more for. I don't want to say business reasons, but I mean sometimes the seedings don't make a lot of sense, and the regions don't make a lot of sense, right? You know, and the other part is BYU will get two home games, right? Mm-hmm. Because no matter what happens, they'll be the top seed in the next round. So they'll get a home game. I like BYU's chances.
Yeah, you got to like their chances in the Marriott Center, especially, right?
Yes, especially at the Marriott Center. I think we win. I mean, you look at it again, Matt, you know, how much better BYU was at home. I know everyone's got kind of that bad taste of that Gonzaga loss at the end, but you know, at home BYU was 13-2 and averaged, I have the numbers here, outscored their opponents by 17 points a game. I mean, you look at who we lost to in in Provo. We lost to two good teams, right? I mean, I one good team, and then the Pacific loss, which is kind of that the one that will bother people a lot, right? But you look at
that's gonna haunt folks.
We beat St. Mary's in Provo. We beat some good teams early on in the year in Provo. So I feel pretty good. And none of these teams are world beaters, man.
No, that's why they're in this tournament.
Yes. So, Matt, were Monmouth and St. Mary's, do you care about these kind of, you know, what do I want to call them? What's the word I'm looking for? They don't make the tournament, so they're what?
Snubbed?
Snub, that's the word.
Is that the word you were looking for?
That was the word I was looking for. Do you care about these kind of snubs, or do you take the attitude, listen, if you'd won your conference tournament, or in the case of St. Mary's, scheduled a game outside of California in your out-of-conference schedule, then you'd be in this, so stop your whining.
I'm kind of in the schedule a game outside of California and stop your whining. But at the same time, St. Mary's, in my opinion, is a tournament team.
Me too. And we talked about that last week. And Monmouth, too.
Well, Monmouth, I don't know. I've got weird feelings about Monmouth.
Because you don't like the bench celebrations?
It's just... when that becomes a thing, that's your team's thing. Like, you just win some games. I know they won a lot of games.
So did I ever tell you what I wanted to do my senior year when I played basketball? Because as you know, I hardly ever played. Right? So I sat the bench, and one of the times I wanted to, during a timeout, coach would not have noticed. I was going to walk away, go to the concession stand, buy some popcorn, and then sit back down on the bench and eat popcorn.
You're like T.O. Except you were on the bench. He did that in the end zone.
Yeah. That's a little different. Monmouth won 27 games. I know they didn't play the toughest schedule.
That was going to be my point. It's the same issue, right? Yeah, look at who they played outside of conference.
It is not,
and
the
they
same
lost
issue.
Some of those.
Yes, but they lost to. They beat UCLA on the road, played USC. Now, I get that these aren't world-beater teams this year. They're names. Okay, beat Drexel on the road. Okay, who cares? Beat Notre Dame.
That's a big win.
So those are I would call two quality wins. UCLA on the road, as at home, it would have been different. Okay? Then they go back and beat USC after losing to USC. Canisius, Niagara... Wagner, that's an okay win, not a great one. And then, they played a tough out-of-conference schedule. They played Big East teams, Big Ten teams, Pac-12 teams. Like you said, they have some losses in there. That Canisius loss is terrible, right? They've got some bad losses, and then they couldn't close the deal in their own tournament. But, man, 27 wins, and they stuck their neck out there and went and played some tough out-of-conference games? I think you're sending the wrong message if you're the – I think the message you're sending to the mid-majors is screw you, right?
I think part of the message you're sending them is you've got to win more out-of-conference, but yeah, maybe that's not even legit to say if you look at what these guys did.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you've got to take care of it in your conference tournament.
Yeah, and they lost three in the – Mac, which is not a great tournament. Canisius, or the MAAC, not the Mac. You would say it Mac. They lost to some teams that aren't very good. So I get it. Their losses were ugly, but I would have liked to seen them in. Matt, let's move on from March Madness. Actually, before we leave, do you have a Final Four picked out yet?
No, I've not done it yet.
What? Do you have a team that you like coming into this tournament? We'll leave it at that.
Michigan State.
Yeah, I like Michigan State.
How can you not like Michigan State?
I like Michigan State. Valentine having a senior point guard who makes really good decisions. I like Michigan State a lot. I also think Virginia is playing really well. I like them a lot. For a team that's maybe a little less on the radar, Purdue.
Yeah, That's a total homer pick.
Yeah, I will say they are playing very well right now. They suffer from the opposite of BYU, is their post play is off the charts, and it's the perimeter play that Kansas has them sink or swim.
I'll tell you, that the conference championship game,
it was great.
But Purdue just couldn't finish it.
Just couldn't finish
it. They were right there.
I also think this is a year, Matt, where we could see a 12 make the Elite Eight.
But I feel like somebody says this every year.
No. What team in here is an all-time great team? Is there a team in here?
Oh, okay, that's true.
You don't have like you've had maybe even the last few years where you say maybe Kansas is, but I don't even think they're up that high. I just really think this is a year where we could – you always see upsets, but I think this is a year where if you're a team like, Northern Iowa, right? You play Texas in the first round. Texas A&M's in the second round if things fall out. And then you get Oklahoma, Oregon State, or somebody like that if you make it that far. None of those teams, even Oklahoma with Bobby as their top player, none of those teams do I go, well, you and I doesn't even belong in the building with any of them. You know what I mean? And they're an 11th seed. And that's true of a couple other, like Gonzaga. This could be a year where I look at theirs and I say, you know, Utah's very good, but would you be shocked if Gonzaga beat them in the second round?
I'm not shocked, but Gonzaga's not going to get past Michigan State.
No. They won't get past Michigan State, but they could make the Sweet 16.
Yeah, they maybe.
I mean, they might not get past Seton Hall. Seton Hall's a pretty good team, so we'll see. Andre Hutchins in the tweet had another question for us, Matt. So, Utah's playing Fresno State in the first round. He asks, question, are you able to watch a Utah game objectively without wanting them to lose? He says, I just can't do it.
No, I can't do it either. Watch it, and I don't get emotionally involved.
But you'd like to see them lose.
I find myself cheering for their opponent.
I don't really get into it emotionally like I used to. I've told this story on the podcast before, but when I was in college, they were in the final against Kentucky. Right? It was Kentucky they played that year, right?
Sure. I'd have to Google that to make sure. It seems right.
It seems right to me. And a bunch of people on campus, including our president, Merrill J. Bateman, were rooting for the University of Utah, and I was so annoyed.
Didn't he go to the University of Utah?
He did, but you don't have to put on a red tie and say in the Daily Universe that good luck, Utah. Like, no, you don't. No, absolutely not. So
I don't know. I don't know which is worse, the tan highlights or the red tie. I don't know.
Oh, the red tie is much worse.
I'd have to think about it. But, you know, I now that I've said that, I don't watch a lot of Utah sporting events.
I almost never see any of their football.
Well, I'll see them because they'll play late games.
Right, right.
You know, and so it's like the last game on Saturday night. And you're like, oh, well, I'm watching it because this is the game that's on. You know, I don't know that I, as a rule, get into rooting for their opponent. I can watch it like I watch any other game.
Right.
Most of the time.
So they lost Utah. Let's see here. Got their it was 1998. All right. And it was Kentucky. They beat North Carolina. That was a good game.
That was a good team.
Well, here's the thing to remember, okay? This was still the WAC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what they did in the conference tournament that year?
They just rolled over.
They lost in the first round to UNLV. Really? Now, it wasn't the first round because they had a bye. If I could look it up, but I'm just going to go off memory because why the heck not? And then they
on that UNLV team? Anybody we remember?
I don't think so. Let's see, that UNLV team 98 Nesby. So you had Keon Clark, Nesby. Those were their best team. Kambala, Nesby, Keon Clark. That was the team. So not a great team. They were 20-13. 7-7 in the WAC. Not a great team. That is the thing, right? We overrate. It's the recency bias. We overrate what just happened, right? So somebody goes on a great conference tournament run and we think they're going to be great in the NCAA. Somebody like Utah did in 1998, does terrible in their conference, scores 51 points against UNLV, and everyone's writing them off, and they make the national championship game. And we're in it with Kentucky for quite a while there and end up winning a total of 30 games. So, you know, sometimes it's just when you get hot. Now, granted, that Utah team, they had a lot of good players on that team. So, I mean, you look at Andre Miller, Doliak, how did you say it? Was Motola? Modula? How did you say Hano's?
I don't remember. I remember Doliak, though.
Oh, Doliak and Andre Miller. Wow. I loved watching that guy play as much as I hated Utah. He might be one of the only guys who made the NBA from Utah that I actually rooted for in the NBA.
What about Bogut? You don't root for Andrew Bogut?
No.
Andrew Bogut.
I didn't root for Doliak either. And I certainly do not Steve Smith Jr. in the NFL.
What about Keith Van Horn? We've now exhausted my Utah basketball knowledge. We've listed every player I can come up with.
No, I didn't really
root
for Keith Van Horn. I did for Tom Chambers back in the day.
I don't even know who that is.
Are you serious? You don't know who Tom Chambers is? You're just embarrassing yourself.
Connect him as a Ute.
Oh, you just remember that he played in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Tom Chambers. Anyway, so that's something to keep in mind as you're filling out your brackets, kids. Keep that in mind. So, Matt, let's move on to football, okay?
Yes.
Dennis Dodd on CBSSports.com, he talked about Taysom's comeback, got some interesting quotes. It basically, we had John Beck on the podcast late last year talking about Taysom coming back. And do you remember what John said?
He'll come back?
Come back, Taysom, because you can always go back and work. And basically, that's what Taysom said.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of felt that way. You know, you've got your whole life to go do other things, and you have this little tiny window to do this.
So, Matt, Taysom believes, based on these quotes and other quotes I've seen from him, that he is not injury prone. He's had freak injuries. I'm in the camp. I agree with him. I don't think he's injury prone. I don't think there's actually evidence of that. I know people are rolling their eyes as I say it, but I don't believe that these injuries don't seem to be related to one another. I think it's just been freak injuries. Matt, am I smoking dope?
Well, here's the deal. If I remove
this,
is
an honor code violation, by the way.
You're not a student.
That's true.
If I remove, you aren't still living the honor code, are you? Sorry, honey. It's 10 o'clock or whatever time it was. It is. One of us has got to go home. So if I go back to his first, if I get rid of this most recent injury, I go back to the other two. Those are both freak injuries. And the fact that it was the same guy from Utah State, whatever, those are both weird injuries that could happen to anybody during the course of football. You know, you look at the one with the broken leg. The guy was just bringing him down. And they got their legs got tied up. That could happen to anybody.
And it does happen.
And it's not a Taysom Hill physical issue for that. And I feel the same way about the knee. And the knee deal, he never should have been on the field during that game anyway, during that play.
No.
That play should
that
never
play
have happened.
Should not have been run. But it did, and that's what happened, unfortunately.
So I think that it's just a strange sequence of three freak injuries that have created this situation. Now, I've heard some people, they've got some theory about his size and speed and torque on his legs and all this. The first two injuries had nothing to do with that.
Well, I'll tell this. This is what I'll say to them. Cam Newton.
Right.
Same body type, fast, tough runner. I'm sorry. Those type of things are just like armchair doctors making stuff up. It has nothing to do with science.
Well, if you look at the medicine. First two injuries, there's no way. The first two injuries had nothing to do with that.
No. I mean, you get injured more as a runner than you do as a quarterback, typically, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's a runner. It just increases his chance. Running backs have a way shorter lifespan in both college and the pros because the impact they take on those tackles. Yes, and people are going to say, well, Ty Detmer separates. Quarterbacks get hurt too. It's a dangerous sport. But running.
Ty Detmer was also a little quarterback.
He was also very small.
And he took some. He stayed in there and took shots.
And that was his style. He did not. I mean, he would release the ball at the last second before he got hammered. And that's why we loved him, right? But here's the thing. If you look at how many 40-year-old quarterbacks are there? Not many, but occasionally people make it to that age. How many 40-year-old running backs are there?
Zero.
None. And Taysom Hill was as much a running back as he was a quarterback. The only theory I buy is what they had said coming into last season. Unfortunately, we never got to see it, which is just have him run the ball less and he has less chance of getting hurt. Right? He had three freak injuries. Does he have soft ligaments? Again, all that, like one of the times he broke his legs. Like, what does that have to do with ligaments? Right? Soft tissue injuries. It wasn't all soft. You know what I mean? So I'm with Dennis Dodd and Taysom Hill. I don't think he's injury prone. Matt, is this quarterback, Dennis Dodd alluded to it, but kind of stayed away from it and Taysom blew it off. is this going to be a problem, this competition? It's not going to be in spring ball because Taysom's not going to play. But in fall camp, percent chance, Matt, that this divides the team, which quarterback controversies can.
I don't see this dividing the team. So here's the ways that this divides the team, okay?
Okay.
This divides the team if the coaching staff drags it out too long. I think it could become a problem.
Yep.
If they choose one guy and then open up the season with three straight losses.
Yes.
You know, something like that.
Yep.
I think it could divide the team. I think the third most likely scenario that would divide the team is if one of the guys has got a real bad attitude about it, either the guy that gets picked or the guy that doesn't. I think those are your three most likely divide the team type of scenarios, right?
Yep.
So if you look at them in the reverse order, I don't think you have an attitude issue with either of these guys.
Nope.
Now, we've talked about this before. Tanner is a BYU guy. He's gonna march in whatever direction Ty Detmer tells him to march. And Taysom, I believe, is going to be the same way. And he may not even be ready at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that's one of the big wild cards in this. Is if he's not physically ready, I think it was Dick Harmon did a great piece in the Deseret News a week or two ago about that, Matt, where he said, being ready by September is certainly within the realm of possibilities, but it's not a given, even with as much of a workhorse as Taysom is. If he's not ready till mid-September, October 1st, then is there a controversy at all? Not unless BYU's losing.
I think the other scenario, one other scenario is that they drag it out too long, but I don't think they're going to do that.
Nope.
I think these coaches are smart enough to try and get past that. You've seen this play its way out. You either name a guy or you make it really clear how you're going to use them both. The one scenario that's a little bit of a wild card is if, they pick a guy and then they come out and they're losing early. Drop two or three of the first three or four. And I think you get to a point there where people start second guessing who should be in, and players might start to divide if you get into that situation. And that's a lot, that's a lot harder to control.
Yeah, and that's the one where, quite frankly, that's you may be justified in making a change, right?
Right. And then if you don't, see, that's the problem is that you would be justified in making a change. So you'll have people who legitimately get into the camp where they feel like you should. And if you don't, you've now divided people up. But if you do, you're going to have other people who say, well, no, he's not the problem. There's these other issues. So I think that's the scariest scenario as far as dividing the locker room is concerned. But if you look at the likelihood of any of those scenarios playing out and how you think the coaches and the players are going to respond, I think it's unlikely we get into a divided locker room scenario with this particular group of coaches and players.
Yeah. So Matt, let's move on to our next football topic. A friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney, writes in the Deseret News about tight ends and that we might actually have tight ends again. So Matt, percent chance that a tight end catches more than 30 balls in this season.
It sounds to me like it's 65.
Yeah. 70, it depends on the 70%? Skills. I mean, I don't know. And I don't mean this as a criticism of any of the guys on the roster. I don't know if any of them are any good.
Well, mate, you mean a single tight end catching over 30?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you don't know if any of these guys are ready to catch like that.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, we never really saw them. Some of them got hurt last year. There had been rumors and talk in spring ball and fall camp that we're going to involve the tight end more, which we actually saw towards the end of the season. He happened to be a defensive lineman.
That seems to tell me that if anybody who was on the roster a year ago.
Yeah, but a couple of them were hurt, to be fair, right? So they weren't actually playing then or were hurt early in the season and didn't get a chance by the time Peck maybe had figured it out. But I'm with you. I'm a little worried that, we may use the tight end more. I don't know if we have somebody on the roster that's going to make us go wow this fall or not.
But I'm excited to find out.
So am I. So am I. Matt, ESPN.com story, Ivan Maisel on why Ty Detmer came back. Detmer said a lot of things, and he said it in other interviews, but what he told Maisel was, he said to his wife, this wasn't going to be a stepping stone. I could be here. This is his job at St. Andrews. I could be here for 20 years. I could do this for 20 years and retire. And the question, Matt, is, Do you believe that Ty Detmer really wasn't gunning for a college job? Or do you think that it was just kind of him getting his feet wet and maybe this came sooner than he expected?
Well, I think that if he was gunning for a college job, he was waiting for a very, very specific situation. Because this wasn't the first window that opened up for Ty Detmer to make that jump.
Yes, right.
It's, you know, it's not the first time this window opened up for him to make the jump to BYU. So if he was biding his time for that opportunity, there was really only one situation or one set of, you know, or a strict list of criteria that was going to get him to go. So there's a part of me that says, yeah, he basically had said, well, unless this scenario plays out the way I have this envisioned, I could just stay here for 20 years and I'll be happy. I think that's the way he was looking at it. And what happened is a scenario played out that fit the criteria he was looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was probably the only scenario that brought him, which is, you know, Satake, a guy maybe he already had a lot of respect for, and coming to not be a quarterback's coach, but to come and run the offense. I've said this on the podcast before. I think the biggest risk this team has is I don't know if Ty Detmer is a good offensive coordinator. I'm not doubting his intelligence. I mean, they've got a Steve Young quote in here, and there are other players that played with him in the NFL who've said several things that he's one of the most intelligent and intuitive players they ever played with or in the NFL, meaning, you know, that he was one of the smartest guys around. I get all that. The flip side to that, of course, is it's one thing to get it. It's another thing to sit there and call the plays and have to make adjustments and do all those things. That's different than playing. It's not necessarily the same skill set.
Yeah, but, you know, and I've been very reserved on my expectations for Ty Detmer. But I'm pretty optimistic at this point about what I think he's going to be able to do with the offense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of us are. I mean, I think we're optimistic. And, you know, his hiring as offensive coordinator doesn't, Heisman Trophy winners who get hired as offensive coordinators get a piece in ASBN.com, not just some guy that had been a coordinator someplace else, right? Like, Mazel wrote this because it's the Heisman Trophy winner coming home, right? I mean, it's a cool story.
Oh, it's a great story, right? You know, and if you look at Detmer, I mean, this is a situation where you got a whole brand new staff, kind of a new culture, they're trying to reconnect to the past. There's a lot about this for Ty Detmer that would make this situation more attractive than maybe some of the other opportunities that had opened up for him.
Well, good, Matt. We have come to the end of the podcast. How much basketball will you be watching this weekend?
I'm going to be watching some basketball this weekend. I'm taking that spring break down here in Texas. So we are taking a little trip here towards the end of the week, but that should open up a little bit of time for me to see some hoops.
I, for the first time in years, Matt, I am taking work off on Friday to just watch basketball.
Yes.
I haven't done this in a few years. I've missed it, and I'm just going to watch basketball all day on Friday. And I'm hopeful that, you know how sometimes the Thursday is great and the Friday's not as good or vice versa. I really hope this isn't the year where all the great games are on Thursday and then Friday's a snooze fest.
That would be awesome.
But it doesn't really matter. I'll still enjoy it. I'll still love it. We will be back next week, Matt. We will talk more spring football as we will have a spring football game to preview. I don't know how we're going to preview it, but we will. And then we will also talk about March Madness and what we watched this last week. Matt, I did want to get your reaction. Cincinnati is campaigning for the Big 12 to get in. Are you okay with that?
Yes, and I hope we're doing it too.
Yeah, yeah. And quite frankly, I would love if it's us and Cincy. After watching the Big 12 basketball tournament, I mean, it's nothing against the West Coast Conference. I mean, you run through that tournament, you've really won something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That, I mean, right now we're not ready to do that, but I think that
we could be in a year or two,
maybe. Oh, in a year or two, yeah. I think we'd be really competitive there. But there's a lot about the Big 12 that's attractive. I think Cincy looks to be a good fit. I mean, I know we didn't get to watch the videos, right? Because they were copyright. But reading about the videos, I'm sold.
Yeah. And apparently West Virginia really wants a geographic rival, so Cincinnati works for that. And Cincinnati's got a good, good basketball and football program. I don't have any problem with them being the partner that BYU goes in with. I mean,
and if you look at like TV markets, which I think are really the biggest point.
Yeah, I think they're the biggest point.
You look at the other teams mentioned in that article and other places about expansion of the Big 12. None of those other teams really deliver a TV market. I know Cincinnati is debatable that they own the Cincinnati college football market.
There's
other teams in Ohio
Ohio
there.
Ohio State does. But yes.
But nobody does. None of those teams own their market.
No.
None of the legitimate candidates.
No. None of the Florida schools. Memphis is probably maybe owns their market.
I don't know.
Probably not. In the middle of SEC.
How widespread is Tennessee? How many schools are right around there?
Yeah, you've got I've spent a lot of time on business the last few years in Memphis, and you get reminded when you're down there just how close Memphis is to the rest of the South, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people I know that I do business with in Memphis are not necessarily originally from Tennessee, and they're Auburn fans and Alabama fans and Georgia fans. So, I mean, you look at that and you go, I don't know that they're similar to Cincinnati, probably even worse, right? Cincinnati, at least, especially from basketball, they have a brand, right? But anyway, it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see, Matt. But we'll see. This conference stuff is going to always be on the radar until some dominoes start to fall. Well, thank you, everybody, for downloading and listening. As I said, we will be back next week to chat about the spring football game. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. You can check us out on Twitter at BYU_riseshout. And, of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
I used to rule the world. Seize it, rise when I gave it.